Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm your host for the evening, Zachary Turcotte, joined by special guest, Eric Statboy Dantoft. How are you doing tonight, Statboy?
Hey, not too bad. Excited to do another podcast with you here, Miz. It seems like it's been a while.
I'm just happy you're still alive after last weekend. I don't know if you guys know the tradition or not, but Statboy throws himself about the biggest birthday bash imaginable every year. It is a 15-hour barbecue extravaganza in his backyard. It's pretty much an all-you-can-eat, all-you-can-drink party with people coming and going all day. I typically make it in the earlier part from about 3 until about 7 or 8 or so. So I leave before all of the crazies get there. But he tells me that they made it all the way to 4 a.m. this year. So I think today is probably the first day that you are feeling like you are coming back to life.
Yeah, you know, I always appreciate you coming, Zach, and you've definitely figured out the prime time to get there when my guy across the street, the barbecue soda smoke, he has his times with his cooks, and we always kind of say that 5:30 to 6:30 window is when we want the best stuff coming out, and you always get some of that, so...
Yeah, you guys had it. You guys were kind of laddering out the food little by little this year. I liked that. I thought that was a good update. So you had some teasers out there early, some brats and some pulled pork, and then later on the brisket and the ribs came out fresh. There were some desserts added there. Only thing I can think of is, I know you're not much of a cocktail guy, I think you need a fancy kind of featured cocktail drink each year that you put together. Have somebody working with the grill man there, right? He's not even the grill man, the smoker man. And yeah, just make one big special cocktail that you can hand out to the vodka drinkers like myself.
Yeah, we could figure something like that out. I'm always trying to add an element every year. So I took under advisement you throwing up a 55-inch so you can watch your football games or UFC, and then we'll in golf clearly, and then
we'll
figure out a cocktail for the non-beer drinkers. That works for me.
Pretty good time. I think, total number of people. You probably have, 50 to 70 people who stop by all throughout the day at different points. It's a pretty good crowd.
You include kids, man. I think it gets up to that 100 range. It starts at 1 and, then it ended at 4 a.m.-ish. So,
that was a lot of fun. I always put that on the calendar every year in October. It's usually the weekend before our MEA, which is where the kids get a few extra days off for a weekend, and that starts this week on Wednesday, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. But you know what else is a lot of fun? Fantasy sports are a lot of fun. And we're coming off of another exciting tournament this past weekend out in Utah. Pretty cool course. I didn't get a lot of time to check it out, but we had a couple members, I think, that made it out there. Our boy Ruxin sent some pictures. Just a really interesting, unique course. I mean, they blasted this thing out of like a lava field out there. So the sight lines are just gorgeous. The desert courses can be interesting and really unique to look at. But then when you have the lava field out there and you've got some of the kind of the mountainous area there in the desert sort of skyline, kind of a cool addition. Certainly fit the fall mode pretty well. There was plenty of scoring. The cut made it up to minus 5 winning scores. I think it ended up being like minus 22 or so. We had a first time tour winner this week, which is always exciting. Matthew McCarty was the winner. Not terribly surprising. He had won 3 times on the KFT to get the field promotion mid-season here into the fall. And he was on the radar for a lot of people previous start. Didn't have the especially good weekend, but if we stuck with him, I think like a lot of us did for coming back to the next week. Jeff hit him at an outright at 50-1, so that's always exciting. Love seeing that. His number came down a little bit after he didn't finish so well, but great to see another big talent come along. We talk about this every year. This is kind of the time for these guys to shine. So some of these younger players you know, you see it this week. Tom Kim, obviously, has had some success early in his career, winning twice here at the Shriners. And so it's always a good spot for some of these future stars to kind of break through. That's the biggest takeaway for me when I am watching the fall portion of the tour, because we're not getting the stars. The stars aren't really coming out much. They really make so much money during the spring and summer months of the year that they just don't really have to play in the fall anymore. And they stay so busy during those busier months that they can kind of afford now to take a couple months off as far as kind of collecting themselves a little bit, recharging, getting healthy from little injuries and things. And so, yeah, it's a good time to just check out some of these younger players, names that you've seen come alive a little bit in events during the summer that aren't necessarily featured. Some of these younger guys like McCarty, other guys that kind of pop up that you maybe saw at the U.S. Open as amateurs during the season that go on a little run now. So that's probably my big takeaway. I know you probably didn't get to watch a whole lot of it, but did you have any thoughts, any takeaways, anything that went right, anything that went terribly wrong?
Well, just to piggyback on what you're saying, this is the PGA Tour post, you know, coming in existence. So what used to be just the swing part, now, as you know, it's just a FedEx Cup fall. So to your point, a lot of those big names take it off. They might play one or two here. You know, the Zozo is kind of popular in 2 weeks here. But, you know, I remember last year it was Ludwig, right? And to your point, Matt McCarty is this year's Ludwig. Yeah. And I hope that he can just kind of take this and run with it and not just fall off of a cliff, because there's so much potential. And yeah, I don't mind it. It's just, it's so volatile. So what went well, you know, not too much. I honestly can't really think of too many things that went well, because I did not have much Matthew McCarty, because I always kind of wait for guys to make the jump. We've kind of talked about this in the past, like European Tour guys, right? So I kind of had the Korn Ferry Tour-esque guys, like, hey, show me what you got. And then to your point, he had a T63 at Sanderson.
Right.
And then comes back and wins. So, well, you miss out on that. And then guys that I faded the week before, so at Sanderson, I was not on Keith Mitchell because of his poor course history and just didn't feel like he didn't take it serious. And he had a very good finish there. And then I went all in on him. And I think a guy named Novak, of course, he ended up WDing at some point. So I was due for something like that.
Yeah. I mean, what ended up happening with him, I think he had a hole or two left to play. And things were, he was not going to make the cut. So it wasn't like an injury related thing. It was more of a rage quit.
he didn't want to mess with his stroke gain stats. You see that all the time, you know.
There was no possibility of him. I think he was at -2 and he needed to get to -5. He maybe just had the par 5 final hole left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you go out there and make an albatross, you're pretty well done. And so he kind of rage quit out there, which is good to at least consider, because I know you see that WD on a guy and your first thing you think is, what's wrong? What injury did he have or come up with? And that really wasn't what ended up happening there. So nothing that I can think of to worry about there. But so we put Utah behind us, and it's an interesting, unique course. At least it offered us something kind of new and different to look at than some of the conventional stuff. But this week we move on to something more familiar. We're headed to Vegas, lovely Las Vegas, where I was just at just a few weeks ago for the UFC event at the Sphere, which was absolutely incredible. But yeah, the players are out this week for the Shriners Children's Open. It's a spot where they stop every year. I think last week is at least a reasonable comp course. We're going to be playing up at a slight bit of elevation, but not a tremendous amount. You know, maybe you can knock off kind of 5% or so of the numbers. I think this one is only at around 2,000 feet above sea level, so slightly lower than before. We've got a 77,250-yard or thereabouts course at TPC Summerlin. It's a par 71. We've got bent grass greens. pretty simple type of layout. You're going to need to make a ton of birdies. The scoring typically gets into the minus 20 range. I haven't given a good check on weather yet or not this week, but I'll take a look at that before, because that's generally the only way that conditions get difficult if the winds pick up. Desert style course, pretty open fairways, a little bit of vegetation, not a whole lot for hazards. Bombers that are here are going to be able to rip it off the tee without any real issues. Rough isn't going to be terribly challenging to play out of. Handful of bunkers that are in play, but they're not a feature that tends to limit scoring at all. Greens are large, utilize bent grass, play to the slower side. Really, it's precision approach play. That's kind of the key to setting yourself up for a lot of birdies. That's what Tom Kim was able to do the last 2 years. He is the back-to-back defending champion, so won here in 2022 and in 2023. So that's kind of notable. Guys that are used to playing in desert-style layouts tend to perform pretty well. It is nice as you start looking down course history. You will see some patterns that kind of play into that. So you look at a guy like Adam Hadwin at 8,900, and you look at the way he performs at a place like this, or the Amex, or Waste Management. And it just seems like everywhere, desert style courses where he plays, he's always got a lot of top finishes there. So there are some dots that you can connect. Being that it's in Vegas, there's a handful of guys that either live in Vegas or grew up there or went to school at UNLV. So kind of make a note of some of those players, I guess, you know, just in looking at the ones that'll stand out. You got Harry Hall. He's from the UK, but he is went to school in Vegas, lives in Vegas now, has played really well here in a handful of starts and is in good form. So that's a name that I think will likely be popular among others. I know your boy Charlie Hoffman is in the field this week, although interestingly enough, though he does live down in this this area now, he has not been particularly good at all over the years.
Scottsdale, TPC Scottsdale guy. That's where I like firing him up.
I get whatever you need to get yourself motivated. Interestingly enough, he has been in decent form of late. So
yeah.
You know, who knows? But yeah, and going back to all the years that we've covered it here, really there was only there's only been like 1 year that really stood out where he had a top 20 finish, and pretty much everything else has been more or less hot garbage for him. But
yeah,
so that's another issue to take into consideration there. Comp courses that I've got for the week, kind of pull those up. I used Black Desert Resort from last week. I think that's a decent starting point. I use the Amex courses. I use TPC Scottsdale, TPC Twin Cities, Deer Run, Craig Ranch, Summit, and Keen Trace. So those were the ones that I ended up using. A lot of the easier courses that we see later on in the summer that are just kind of set up for guys to dominate and play pretty well. Some of the other desert courses, a couple of the ones that are at elevation. Any other thoughts that you want to contribute before we move on?
You're kind of right on. Desert style course. Don't forget about La Quinta Country Club, because you mentioned Hadwin and some of those correlations. So I have that one up there as well. Basically, second shot. Hit the fairway. And then your approach shot just landed close to the pin. Easy as pie, right? When you're playing the game of golf.
Yeah, that's I think some of the biggest things. It's you get the real skilled iron players are going to shine. That's why I like Tom Kim. Tom Kim's been dominant here. Cantlay, when he used to play, was pretty dominant here. It was the real precision approach guys from that kind of 150 to 200 yard range that was sort of the sweet spot, I think, for guys as far as what they were able to do. Key stats, obviously, we get the regular ones that kind of stand out, birdie or better percentage, strokes gained putting, tee to green. But approach play was a big one. Proximity was another one. And then, scrambling is one that we tend to see each week. But yeah, kind of zero in on some of those approach game players for the week. Moving on to the top of the field, it's priced pretty similarly again, only three players. I don't like the pricing here this week. You know, the last couple of weeks, Keith Mitchell has been at the top, and that's been fine. Yeah. And I think 10-6 was reasonable just to get people to play Keith Mitchell, but he had no course history 2 weeks ago. A little better as far as last week and coming off of his good finish. I guess it wasn't, you know, quite so bad to pay up for him if you could. But this week, there's one guy up at the top here, Tom Kim. We've already talked about it. He's won the last 2 years. He is the class of the field, I think. I just think 10-8 is too low of a price. I think they really needed to bump him up. Make him like 12, right? Make him 12-5. Make him something where you're really going to have to pay up to get him, because 10-8 is too easy. You know, it's just too easy to put him into this field and, you know, let him have a shot at going for number three. And even if he doesn't get number three, I think he's probably still going to be pretty competitive as far as what he's been doing. You know, the numbers for him have been really good. Again, the iron play, which we've kind of talked about here already, if you look at like the last 16 rounds, the rolling numbers, he ranks second among this field as far as strokes gained approach. So even though the putting and the short game hasn't been fantastic, I think the short game probably is still enough to carry him. But 10-8 there, you're going to need to be quite a buyer if you want to be ahead of the field. I can't think he's going to come in any less than 20 to 25% ownership, at least, probably higher than that in cash games. So Tom Kim will be the pick for me at 10-8 in this range. Are you feeling Davis Thompson or Taylor Pendrith at all for your player pools? Have you gotten that far yet to building those?
Yeah, I mean, just to your point, if Keith Mitchell was 10-6 last week, 10-8 for Tom Kim is way too cheap. And I even think the betting markets aren't properly adjusting for his class. Now, winning three times in a row is very difficult, but this is DFS, so I feel like you're spot on. Like, you plug Tom Kim in, you're probably going to get a top 20, and then let's just see if you can hit the winner somewhere else, right. Just knowing like you have a high floor. So that is absolutely, and if I had to go to anybody else, it'd be Taylor Pendrith. I'm not feeling Davis Thompson for 10-3 at all. I'm sorry.
He's played all right. I mean, his rolling numbers are pretty decent. He played pretty well throughout most of the season.
But you're not going to convince me not to spend $500 extra to get the top.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Davis has been really good this year. I mean, you're picking up his first win. You know, he only missed a handful of cuts. He had 12 top 25 finishes, four top tens. But I mean, since his win at the John Deere, which is great, I mean, he was 46th in Scotland, 66th the Open, 12 at the Wyndham, 33rd at FedEx St. Jude, 41 at BMW. So it's challenging because he's not necessarily always in contention. He's certainly a very good player. It wouldn't be an unreasonable pivot. But you also have to think it's been, you know, just under 2 months or so since he played back at the BMW. I mean, and Tom Kim's had a pretty good layoff as well, though he did play at the President's Cup. So there is so that within the last few weeks. Yep, and Pendrith was there too. And Pendrith has had a bunch of top 25s of late. So I think they're all decently a play. I think you just have to kind of play with it a little bit and see how it comes out, because there's enough guys in the middle range to make it interesting, depending on how many you want.
Yeah.
Dropping down here, we have a little wider range in the 9K this week. I think there's a pretty good drop in terms of the talent there. So the guys in the 10K range, significantly better than the 9K range, at least in my very humble opinion. You have Stefan Jaeger there at 9,900. Coming off of the second place finish last week, obviously he had a very good last season. I've talked about him at length, where he had a really long cuts made streak at the end of 2022, beginning of 2023, and then was good enough so that he qualified for a lot of the bigger events and struggled at most of those. And so I think if you continued to play him in the weaker field events on the easier courses, you were rewarded. Just like last week, he was a core play for me. second place, that's much, much better than what you're used to seeing. But yeah, as long as you're not loading them up at like Augusta or, you know, Players or some of these other courses that are going to press him a little bit, he's been a decent player. Now 9,900, it gets challenging to continue to pay for him at that price. And he's kind of been in the lower nines and now he's 9,900. So it's tricky. The statistics certainly look pretty good for him, but yeah, just that price tag for me gets a little scary. So I may be off of him. Tom Hoagie's been all right. He's very streaky. What you like with Hoagie is we've kind of mentioned he was incredible this past year. As far as iron play, it has not been as good. So if you look at like the more recent rounds, it's not nearly as good as what it had been, but he had been, and let me just see if I can pull him up here. Like a top, at least top 10, maybe even like a top five guy as far as strokes gained approach numbers on the season. Let's just see what we've got here. Yeah, sure enough. Yeah, there he is. Number three for the year in strokes gained approach. So just outstanding there on that, but not really much in any other part of his game. Of course, history has been pretty good, but again, he does have a few missed cuts in there too. So a little unsure of those guys. Seamus Power is somebody who's really popping for me in my model. I'm not sure if that's the same for you, but really impressed with his recent play. He's played quite a bit in recent months. He actually ranks number one for me in strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. Look at him here over the last 12 weeks. He's played six times. He's made the cut in every one. The last five finishes, he's finished at least 28th or better, back-to-back 11th place finishes. Checkered history at this course here, but the numbers in terms of what he has been doing of late, I'm really impressed with. So Seamus is probably my favorite play here in this range. Give me some thoughts on a couple guys that you like in the 9K.
You know, it is kind of a mucky situation, but that's the reality of these FedEx fall events. One guy that I do have an eye on that I know is still hungry. We always talk about, you know, sometimes I talk about it with Aaron, our website guys, you know, how do you calculate motivation with some of these players, right? It's always an intangible, right? So one guy that I have always kind of been tracking when he's getting hot and whatever is actually Bo Hostler, right? So 9,500. And with Bo, what I noticed, especially last year, is when you're riding him hot, so he's coming off a solo second at Sanderson, and then a T11 at last week at the Black Desert. And then when I kind of dial it up and start deep diving, I see, look at that T7 last year. So he kind of figured out, he kind of muddled around here, and then he kind of started putting it together. So to me, I kind of look for that recent finish, and it was during the FedEx Cup fall last year. And he's a guy, I think, at 9,500, pretty fair. You know he's hungry. He's lost in playoffs, I think, a couple times. So he's still hungry for that first win, and I feel like he's a high-potential candidate to get that done in the FedEx Cup fall here.
Yeah, he is streaky. I remember last year, like I'd written him up a handful of times because he had he started off and it looked like, okay, this guy's kind of broken through a little bit. He seemed like he was a new player. We had a couple guys that were like that, and he started last fall, and then the beginning of this year he continued that run, and then it sort of fizzled out. He hit the Florida swing, couple of tough courses in there, and he, you know, for like the next 6-7 weeks, not great. Had one brief moment there where he, you know, top five at Myrtle Beach, and then kind of back to making and missing cuts. But did close the season decent with a 12th place finish at Wyndham. Did miss a cut in California, but then second and 11th. So it seems like things might be rolling again for him. You know, so if we just kind of look back at, you know, how he was playing last year, there's certain guys, and what you notice with the fall golfers is that there's some guys who just kind of wait and then sort of light it up each year in the fall. And that was sort of what happened with Bo last year. He had a strong finish to the summer, decent playoff finish, and then right into the fall, 30th in California, 20th at Sanderson Farms, and then 7th at the Shriners, 2nd at the Zozo, 15th in Mexico. So this was the same time last year when he got hot, and it looks like he could be following the same pattern with the 2nd and 11th place finish. You know, to kind of get started here these last couple of weeks. I definitely think he's one to keep an eye on. Hate the price, 9,500, but it's a weaker field.
I know.
There's just not a lot of guys that – guys, we used to get guys, big-time players that would show up for this. We'd get guys like Cantlay that would come out.
Oh, yeah.
We don't get that now, and that creates a lot of lower pricing pressures from underneath that push a lot of these guys that kind of inflate a lot of these guys' prices. So I like the Hosler call. I don't mind that one at all. Keith Mitchell, I think I'll just stay out on Mitchell. He's always been garbage at this course. That means he'll probably be like T3 this week after missing the cut last week and burning everybody. But I think he's one that I can stay away from. What do you do with a guy like Matthew McCarty? Wins last week. He's been red hot on the Corn Ferry Tour. You know, a lot of people are going to say, well, his motivation might drop. But, I mean, the guy has won 3 recent times here this past summer, now a 4th with his first PGA Tour win. It appears that he's got a fair amount of talent, and it seems like he is got the pedal to the metal. He's not even going to sit out this week. Are you worried that there's going to be a little bit of a letdown?
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, this is where – you know, he's kind of a late bloomer. And when you are playing good golf, you're playing good golf. And that, I mean, I'll have some exposure to him because I think just some people might be thinking like what a lot of people think, like, he's there's going to be the drop off. But if he's this year, Ludwig has only been pedal to the metal. Like if you are that good at golf, you're always going to be that good at golf. So we could be on to something special with Matt McCarty here. 9,100 is more than I'd like to spend. But he just won, and I'd be willing to bet that he's willing to see if he can just go again. The thing is, where it really hurts me is just no course history, because the course history comps here are pretty strong.
But let me dissuade you in terms of that take. He is born in Scottsdale and lives in Scottsdale, plays out of Scottsdale. So what course is in Scottsdale?
TPC Scottsdale.
Yes, you got it. Good guess. Yes. It's waste management down there. So he won last week at a slight elevation on a desert style type of course. I'm guessing this is going to be the type of course his game is very familiar with. He's kind of from this area of the country. So I actually think that this is going to be another spot that fits his game extremely well. So I think that's probably why he's here. So for me, I'm going to go right back to him. I hope that there are people who go with that narrative of, he won last week, so he's not going to care this week. As I think that just makes it easier for me to get leverage. Mm-hmm. So if he's only going to be, 10, 12% or whatever, then, I'm happy to, hop on and get 20 to 25%, be a little above the field. Because he just seems like, from what we've seen so far over these last few months and then last weekend, extremely talented player. A guy who we, if he continues along this trend, could be somebody who ends up being very, very good in the years ahead. And we likely are not going to get opportunities like this to use him in this type of a field. So I will go right back to him there. Dropping down into the 8K range, not a lot of names in the 8K range. Interesting. There's only 7 golfers there. Talked a little bit about Adam Hadwin. Just for whatever reason, desert golf tends to be his thing. Has some of the best in terms of comp course numbers. So looking over my comp course model for the week of guys who have at least 10 starts on comp courses, he ranks 3rd overall.
Course history, you're almost getting a top 10 out of him here based on the last 4 of the last 5 years. Just solo 2nd, T10, T6, T34, T4.
Yeah.
Those are his last 4 starts. So he's definitely a gamer here.
Yeah, you'll have to see that. The game hasn't been amazing of late. So that's, that's a little bit disappointing, but I think in a field like this, you can overlook it to some degree. So I think Adam Hadwin is in for me. Cam Davis is in for me at 8,800. Talked about a little bit about Bo Hosler previously, guys who get hot this time of year. He is much the same sort of story. For a lot of this season, he was very, very forgettable in terms of his play. Wasn't somebody that we really looked at all for DFS. But then, you know, kind of late in the season, we've seen this as a pattern over the last couple of years where he can be mostly garbage during those spring and early summer events, really sort of struggles along. And then he hit the doldrums where he's at, you know, Rocket Mortgage and John Deere and the 3M Open, those types of places. And then he just kind of starts lighting it up. And that's the same thing that happened this year. So he won at the Rocket Mortgage 26th and Scotland 19th at the 3M. He did miss the cut with a one bad round at the Wyndham, but then was decent in the playoffs, 40th at the FedEx St. Jude, and then 5th at the BMW. So definitely closed the season very strong. You know, played in the President's Cup recently there, so it hasn't been, you know, a full 8 weeks of layoff. He did play a few weeks ago there, so I think Cam Davis and Hadwin are there for me at the top. Harry Hall is going to be an obvious play. I think he's just an absolute lock button play for me in cash games. Talked about how he's from Vegas. He's played here over the last few years. Super familiar with the course. He's playing reasonably well. Coming off of his first win on tour this season. Those are probably my three favorite plays. You got anything else to throw in?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much covered. Yeah, I mean, the 8K range is actually not that bad, all things considered.
Right.
You know, even JT Poston at 8,100, T3 last year. I mean, he's Ben Griffin. Ben Griffin, not ideally best course history, but, you know, the guy's been playing good golf too. So I don't have a huge problem with the 8K range.
Poston really shows up for me. Again, on the comp courses, he's gained over a stroke per round and 36 career starts. So that's pretty encouraging. I want to say we've seen some things from him out of like the Amex as well as a Waste Management over the years too. So I think that's decent to look at. And he's had a handful of really nice starts here. Hasn't played much lately, but yeah, I definitely wouldn't mind including him in some things. Dropping down 7K range, much, much wider range. Got quite a few players to work with here this week. I've kind of led things off on each of the other ranges. Give me your favorite sort of plays from the mid to high 7Ks this week.
Yeah, on the higher range, I still have JJ Spahn popping in my model. I mean, if you take out that WD, what was it, 2 weeks ago? You know, he bounced back last week, and now you got a little bit more of a discount, all things considered, because I think at the Sanderson, he was priced way up there.
Yeah, he's like, striking the ball extremely well. His tee to green numbers are really strong of late, especially for his range.
Yeah, seeing the T25 last week just to make sure, because again, when you know, see, this is where I need your help, man. You got to let me know when someone rage quits or if there's a potential injury, because he did withdraw after first round at Sanderson, but came back with a T25, four rounds in the 60s. So that tells me you're in good shape. And then what I also like to look at then is, all right, if your ball striking's okay, how about your course history? Nothing special, T15 two years ago here, but that goes to show like there's a little bit of upside. Spahn has always been a gamer on the PGA Tour when healthy. He's trying to make cuts. He's trying to do well. So
over the last 24 rounds, he ranks 5th among this field in strokes gained tee to green and 5th in strokes gained total. So the game is definitely coming back and off the tee and on approach. Particularly sharp, so I like that. Decent comp course numbers there. Don't mind that at all. What do you think of Kevin Yu coming back this week? This is his first start after winning 2 weeks ago at Sanderson Farms. He's made two of three cuts here, a little bit up and down the season. What do you think of his game?
I don't mind Kevin Yu. He did well for me at the Amex back. I remember starting the year off with him down there. So he's clearly a desert guy. I think he probably celebrated his first win. So this would be the timing, but I don't know. I just feel like he's going to be the guy that I think is going to now, I don't want to say just coast, but again, the motivation factor. I just don't really get that vibe that he's just going to be this Matt McCarty-esque type run here.
Maybe. I don't mind the price there. Guy that I really like right here is Matty Schmidt.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. $7,800.
He's really putting it together of late. Mm-hmm. He's somebody Jeff has been following for a while. He's kind of followed mm-hmm. him on the DP World Tour over the years. He's been pretty familiar with his game. Had missed quite a few cuts. And then, you know, this last few months or so has definitely started to kind of find his game. He's been good comp course-wise, gained nearly 0.8 strokes per round, 12 career starts. Looking at him, the last 24 rounds ranks 23rd in terms of strokes gained total there. So seems like pretty good value for the price. Mm-hmm. You know, you get these fields where things are a little bit weaker like that. So I definitely don't mind there. And he's 26 here a year ago. So I think Matty Schmidt is in play. I think you can even look at like Andrew Putnam at 7,700. He's a guy who plays at this event every year. He's made top 20s in three of his last five starts. Decent start to the fall season. He's made a couple cuts, was 25th a couple weeks ago. So I don't mind that. Minnesota connection here at Eric Van Ruyen at 7,700. This is around the time last year when he started to get hot. Do you think he can get back to that a little bit this year?
Well, I remember last year, our boy Van Ruyen,
he had a win.
He was playing. He did, and he was very motivated. I think he had a friend sick or someone had passed away. I don't remember. I'd have to recall, but I remember watching his interviews, and he was just saying, playing very inspirational golf. As far as him coming here this week, I mean, there's enough going on here. He was staying lukewarm while he did some made a couple of false starts over on the World Tour, DP World Tour, and then he played last week, so... I don't mind him. He's showing the upside. I'm looking for though, that specifically that getting into that course history angle a little bit, if that form's there. Showed a T23 last year. So you could make the case for him. I think we got to drop down a little bit lower. Cause if we're going to get some value plays in there, some guys that I've been kind of looking at for me a little bit lower is, Kuchar at 7,300 and Doug Gim. So there's two guys back, right there, and even
back for Cooch. He burned me a couple of weeks ago, so that definitely hurt me a little bit. But these fall events, easier courses, guy who can mm-hmm. kind of chip and putt, guy who keeps the ball in play, decent from the short irons. I think that's been a good spot for Cooch. He's just been okay in three starts, but he hasn't missed any cuts either. So that's encouraging. Doug Gim is somebody who's kind of popped for me a little bit. Not a guy who is probably going to find his way into contention a lot of the time just because his putting is so damn bad. He did kind of figure it out for a while. There was a stretch where it seemed like, oh, he's got it. He's gonna get it fixed. I mean, his tee to green game has been outstanding. Second in strokes gained tee to green over our last 24 rounds. Actually ranks number one in strokes gained approach. It's just a short game that, you know, that kind of kills him, but playing pretty well. Like if he just puts he's one of these guys where you say, if he just puts average, he's going to be in the top 10 kind of a guy. 7,300 though. I don't mind that price. Patton Kizzire, I like this week at 7,300. He's obviously coming off a win in California a few weeks back, but followed it up with an 11th at Sanderson Farms. He was 43rd this past week, so playing reasonably well. You have to look back a few years to get his real good history here, but 7,300 I think is a pretty fair price. Ball striking has been pretty sharp. I don't know if that stands up or not, but it's been decent over the last few months or so. So I don't mind that there. Can you get back to a guy like Andrew Novak or Justin Lower after they tore your lineup to shreds a week ago?
Probably. They had 2 days head start to get down to a place that they're more familiar with. It's just, it's our whole recency bias. I'm never going to let just two rounds, you know, affect the big picture. You know, every year every week on a Monday, Tuesday here, we get to restart, right? And I bet you these guys think the same thing after a bad round or a rage quit, apparently. So, You know, I think when you're building lineups this week, if you're capping your ownership percents, I mean, I would say 5-10% for those guys. I mean, GPP only. I don't know if I would go cashing with those, but
yeah.
You know, it's just one of those weeks where you're trying to find that right combo. And if you get any kind of recency bias, I mean, we're victims of that ourselves. You might as well take advantage of it in this world with these kind of volatile fields. So I think they definitely warrant some GPP exposure.
A couple names, blast from the past, guys who are bigger names typically over the years, but have sort of fallen on harder times of late, kind of battling some injuries here. Two of them down here that I'm a little bit interested in. Daniel Berger at 7,200. Talked about him last week. He gave an interview and he was somewhat in contention going into the weekend.
You're going to say Webby?
I'm not going to say Webb. I'm not going to say Webb. It's a different one, different name. Because I'm just tired of bringing up Webb for his good course history at events and then just seeing him trash it. But Daniel Berger says he's healthy now. So he said he was healthy at Sanderson Farms. It was like the first time he'd really felt 100%. You know, finished 35th, kind of a nondescript type of finish, but we know how good of a player he is. I'm not going to look at you know, the rolling numbers that much. I'm not going to look at any of the statistics. I'm just going to take his word that, okay, he's saying he's healthy. He's saying he feels good. We know that he's a former winner on tour. He's still relatively young. This is not an old guy by any stretch here. So if he can get kind of things back on track a little bit, I don't mind. So he's somebody that I'm going to own there at 7,200. Another older name that I think may be worth considering. I haven't probably put him into my player pool in forever, but Gary Woodland.
He was my next guy. Either him or Griot, I was going to say, had it been your two next guys.
7,100. I mean, this is a guy who was a major event winner not all that long ago, just a few years ago. Was it 2019?
There were years where we rode Woodland for the longest time, even at the Farmers, and it was just
right. Tournament history, you know, not bad. He had a withdrawal a couple years back, but prior to that, it had been a good course. He's experienced here. Comp course numbers look good. You're not going to see anything again with him rolling stats wise that. That are really going to stand out. And I don't know. It just seems like in recent starts, he has been a little bit better than terrible. Lack of a better way to put it. You know, made a couple of cuts to kind of end the fall season, was 16th at Sanderson Farms. So maybe he can just turn the clock back just slightly there. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit too optimistic, but it seems like maybe there's something there. Over his last four starts or so, he's at least seems like maybe he's finding something. Not somebody to put a ton of shares in, but you know, if you look at him betting wise, he's probably going to be like 100-1, something crazy. Might be just a little outright sort of bet that you put on. Might be a guy you throw in for 5% on the GPP side. But just somebody who ever so slightly caught my eye there. Nick Taylor at 7,100 is another guy who plays this event, you know, pretty much every year, which is definitely something that I like. Decent comp course numbers there overall. It's just somebody you can fill into your player pool with, get a little bit of cap relief. So I don't mind that. Henrik Norlander, I'll stick with him. Super streaky guy, which is also something that I've probably said 100 times on the podcast and mentioned in my article. But coming off of an 8th place finish this past week, and I stuck with him, which I was happy with because the previous course had kind of been his sweet spot where everything had gone really well for him. But really strong numbers across the board as far as tee to green. Putter is always a little bit of an issue, but at 7,000, getting the guy who ranks 7th among this field over the last 24 rounds, tee to green, really good. As far as his iron play, really good. As far as his around the green play, yeah, it's really just the putter there that has kind of caught up with him. So I don't mind sticking with him for another week. He's going to start missing cuts and be streaky, and then you can ignore him again. But the fall portion of the season, I like him. So there's another play that I am in on. Anybody else in this low 7K range. I guess Alex Smalley has been pretty good the last couple of weeks. You might want to take a look at him. Anybody in like the low 7K, upper sixes that you want to get a shout out to? Yeah, I mean, there's
another one other guy, because I remember playing him when he was like 9,400 a couple weeks ago, but Patrick Fishburne, he's still popping for me. 7,200, okay, no course history here, but you can always kind of tell where, you know, previous weeks with how soft the field are, with how much guys drop. So this one clearly is a stronger field, apparently, to Vegas and DK pricing, because some of these guys were like 9,000 bucks, right? But getting down on the sixes, you know, KH Lee, he's Grayson Sigg. Those are a couple guys popping for me here. Sure. You could even make a case for Chad Ramey. He's a former PGA Tour winner, decent course history here. So, you know, you're going to need to have some options there. Joel Damon, even 66, and Ryan Moore. I mean, sometimes those guys just know, like, they have to get it done here just so that they have some, they can build their schedule next year with getting these FedEx Cup fall points. So, you know, we mentioned earlier, this is a ball strikers scenario. So I kind of think back, like back in the heyday, you know, Ryan Moore is a ball striker. Joel Damon, when he's hot, he can get that done. So I think finding guys like that is the way to go.
Well, what else do you know about Ryan Moore?
Well, here's what I remember is when I first started with FGI and I was really learning these guys. And I remember running out the, it was during the playoffs, and you were like, we're playing Ryan Palmer and we're playing Ryan Moore. And I just remember that. And those guys were just,
where's Ryan? Their way. Let me make it easier for you. Where's Ryan Moore from?
Washington, I believe.
He was born.
Pretty sure.
Where did he go to school?
Well, that's what I do not know then.
UNLV. Yeah.
Come on.
I'm trying to put this on a tee for you, stat boy. Come on. Help me out. Where does he live now? Where does he live now?
Las Vegas.
Come on, stat boy.
All right. Sorry. I'm glad my natural instinct kicked in here because I was looking at the course history. I could have made that dotted line. I just knew he was a Washington guy because one of my good golfing buddies says he sees him every now and then.
He's got the Vegas connection. He plays here every year. He's one of these guys who plays here every year. So that's a good connection. You see that kind of pop up for him a little bit.
Yeah.
Other 6K guys that I do like, Rico Hoey, 6,900. You get a nice price break there. I mean, he wasn't great at Sanderson Farms a couple weeks ago, but beyond that, he's made like, what, 8 or 9 straight cuts now. You know, the ball striking numbers still look really good.
Are you going to go party with Party Marty?
Yeah, I mean,
former winner.
Right. And what kind of courses does he tend to play well on? He tends to play well on these desert style courses, right? He's a Scottsdale guy, right? So he's got that connection going for him.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And he won here kind of out of nowhere a few years back. Played here every year. Yeah, he hasn't really been in great form for me. So I think for that, I'll probably end up overlooking him. I don't think he's going to make the player pool for me just because he hasn't been swinging the club all that well of late. But I get the narrative. I definitely understand that a little bit. Yeah, you get the Joel Damon narrative there too. I haven't seen much out of Joel. Yeah, he made the cut. He finished 40th, and 40th has been like a high finish for him. I mean, he's just been nowhere close to contention of late. So I think that's probably one that's going to be easy for me to dodge. There's not much else down here that really stood out. You got Taylor Montgomery. Maybe I want him to be good again. He's another Vegas guy. He lives in the area. He's been good here the last couple of years. This has been the part of the season where he's been better, but missed the cut, withdraw, missed cut. I think I'm out. I don't think I can get there on him this week. And so I think there's just enough value here that we found in a number of 6K players, a number of low end 7K guys. I don't think you have to get too crazy. You don't really want to stretch your player pool too much to try to include every one of these guys. Maybe throw in an outright bet or something on somebody if you really have a feeling on somebody down here. But beyond that, I think we just have enough better options overall that I don't think we got to play around too much. So I think that we'll kind of do it for me this week. What do you got? Anything else for us this week, Step?
Yeah, no. I mean, again, thanks for coming out there on Saturday. And again, if you guys are ever in the area, let me know. You guys can definitely get an invite to this if you're not chasing around the FedEx Cup fall tour. know, you never know. So, but I appreciate you having me on. It's always fun to talk golf, and in the middle of a NFL season, the Vikes are 5-0 coming off a bye. So we're kind of happy here. And I think the Poleheads are going to sell the Twins. So let's go.
Yeah. Everybody's excited. Yeah. It was a good week football wise. Cash game won easily. You guys probably saw my lineup before in our FIE league. We've got 32 teams in there, so that's pretty cool. Got rid of that, actually broke it down into divisions and teams. Actually, since we had 32, assigned each person like an NFL team and then just used their same schedule throughout the season to do a full season, a full slate of games, which is kind of neat. So that's been fun. It makes it interesting. So everybody who's in that has already seen my cash lineup, but it did very well. I was very happy with that. I tried to play FanDuel. I tried to enter a lineup Sunday morning and the contest didn't fill. So I need to get on top of FanDuel bigger contests a little earlier, just so I have something to write up over there. My lineup easily would have cashed there too. So I'm a little bit disappointed, but they're just so small and they don't get contests to fill up. So it's a little bit disappointing there, but DraftKings was great. So that was a winner. Betting picks were really good. Jeffrey was 4-1 this week. So he was 5-0 last week, 4-1 this week. I was 6-3 last week and then 5-3 this week. So we've both been doing pretty well. Those are coming together nicely. If you're tracking Jeff's season long props, those are all looking really good. He is on pace to have his sixth winning season in a row over there. So that's great. That's really cool. You do want to check that out. Realize if you sign up, it is a 12-month subscription. So even though we're coming up on week 7 this week, a 12-month subscription will take you all the way to that point next week. So you get everything that we do during the summer months and into the regular season, all included for the cost of a normal subscription rate now. So keep that in consideration if you do want to find something to get into football and you're looking for a very reasonably priced option. Because I think we have a great product. I think our write-ups are on par with anybody else that's out there. So give us a shot. With that, Stat Boy, we will get out of here just inside of an hour. I know we said maybe 30 minutes, but hey, for us, 52 minutes is short. So thanks for filling in for Jeffrey this week. He was off watching his daughter's sectional tennis tournament this week. So hopefully she was able to get to state as a freshman. But he should be back with us next week.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, Stat Boy. And with that, we say good night to you. Good luck this week at the Shriners, and good luck for the rest of the fall season.